buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown joining you on a Tuesday afternoon. Plenty to break down, plenty to talk about as we get closer to March Madness and the bracketology is heating up. We'll dive into that at the beginning of the hour. Also talk about the Vols taking on the Kansas State Wildcats tonight in baseball. Big weekend or midweek matchup for them. Best bets at the end of the hour, as always, 865-546-8200. Your number. Do you want to hop in and join us, guys? Doing well today?
Yeah.
Trying to enjoy the nicer, warmer weather before, the rain's supposed to hit tonight.
Yeah, it was beautiful yesterday and today.
Yes.
And going down back into the 40s and 50s.
Of course.
Just wonderful. At least it's like right before our spring break, if anything.
That's fair.
Yeah. Ugh. All right, let's get into it and begin with Vols Bracketology, one of our favorite segments here on Overtime. We are just days away from CBS's March Madness theme song clamoring among our walls as we all anticipate the selection committee's reveal of the 68 teams that have been selected for the NCAA tournament. ESPN's Joe Lunardi released his updated bracketology to give college basketball fans the latest on the standing of the big dance. Real quick, the one seeds consist of Purdue, UConn, Houston, and Arizona. Two seeds still have Tennessee as the top two seed. Iowa State, North Carolina, and Marquette are the ones to follow. The Vols, who are 23-6 and a 13-3 in SEC play, are the highest ranked two seed, and the margin between them and Arizona is, quote, razor thin. Guys, we'll begin with this. Should Tennessee be a one seed?
I mean, yeah, we covered this yesterday. We asked the same question, and I'm going to give the same answer. I hate to be redundant, but I'm literally going to say the same thing I did yesterday, and I'm going to let their resume speak for themselves. If anybody did not happen to listen last night, here's the resume breakdown for the two teams. Again, as of Saturday, after Tennessee's win against Alabama. For ranked wins, Arizona has two. They are against number 10, Duke, and number 14, Alabama. For the Vols, number 13, Illinois, number 24, Florida, number 14, Alabama, twice, number 16, Kentucky, and number 11, Auburn. In terms of losses, for Arizona, Purdue, FAU, Stanford, Washington State twice, and Oregon State, which we mentioned was 156th in the KenPom. For Tennessee, Purdue, Kansas, UNC, Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Texas A&M, which, fun stat from Jordan Moore yesterday, if you missed it, the combined KenPom rankings of the Vols' losses equal Oregon State's 156th ranking. So the resume speak for themselves, and I'm just going to give the same answer again.
Yeah, same here. I mean, hit on it a bunch yesterday. Just the quality of wins and the schedule that you're facing, just flat out, is so much better for the Vols up to this point, and it's going to continue that way just because of how weak the Pac-12 has been this year for the most part. And in those games, Tennessee has been able to pull out some big-time wins, just like I said last night. In some of these games that they're supposed to win, they're winning them handily, or sometimes Arizona's had a slip-up or come real close to losing. I mean, Tennessee's had a couple of those, but, again, the good outweighs the bad for the Vols here. Again, just hitting on the resume, Tennessee just up and down the board. That twice as many ranked wins as Arizona, a tougher conference schedule. It really shouldn't be a question. I think Arizona's good enough for a one seed, but beating out the Vols is kind of an odd way to put it there.
Yeah, Tennessee should be a one seed. And something I've been seeing as of late is that we've seen people saying that, quote, we've seen this movie before from Tennessee, being very highly rated. We know what they are defensively, but come tournament time, they're not able to get it done. But my rebuttal to that is I think this team is completely different than years past. 35% of your possessions are between 0 and 10 seconds. That's in the 91st percentile in college basketball. And 1.30 points per possession. That's 94th percentile in college basketball. Since Rick Barnes has coached this team, those are the highest numbers for a Tennessee offense in terms of pace. You've got a closer in Dalton Knecht, a guy that can score at three levels gracefully and is averaging 21 a night and shooting 48% from the field and 40% from three. You've got a closer now a guy that can go in and take over a game in the latter moments and will this team to a win. You haven't had that in years past. And I think this year's supporting cast complements Connect well. And I think even this year you've seen even more guys get involved than years past. I think you can go down the list now and look at every game this season and look at the supporting cast and say, okay, that guy had a big impact on that one. Okay, that guy had a big impact on this one, right? You can go down, I mean, Jordan Ganey in one game. Zakai Ziegler, we know what he is in every game and same what they do. But Josiah Jordan James has had his footprint on a couple of games like Kentucky. The Jemai Mashak game, which we called yesterday, was on Saturday. Tobe Awaka has been really big against Missouri and Auburn. Every single game, you can go back and point your finger at one player out of that supporting cast and said, that guy was a big impact. I think that's what makes this team different. Pace, you have a closer in Connect, and the supporting cast is more consistent. You get a production from each one of them, or at least one of them each night. I think that's different from years past. So now talking about this year's team and if they should be a one seed, I think this team has continued to trend in the correct direction, and that's the right direction. Years past, we've had a lot of success in January, and then it's kind of holding on to that success of like a thread of a backpack. And as it's weighing down, there's a little thread that keeps you there that knows what you were able to do in January. This team, however, continues to get stronger, continues to build the resume, continues to get good wins, I should say. So now comparing Arizona and Tennessee, I'll go even a little bit more in depth here. KenPom has Arizona at 4, Tennessee at 5. The net rankings have Arizona at 4 and Tennessee at 5. Now, quad one wins. Arizona's 8-3. Tennessee is 6-5. But keep in mind, two opportunities this week to get quad one wins at South Carolina tomorrow, Kentucky at home on Saturday. Quad two and quad three. Arizona's 13-3. Three losses in the quads, 2-3. Tennessee's 12-1. And one thing we talked about yesterday and Jordan added in was the combined loss rating of taking the KenPom ratings that Arizona has lost to, 391, Tennessee 157, Oregon State now at 157 in the KenPom as well. One loss results in six losses for Tennessee. So when I look at it, I think Tennessee is the better team. They've put together a better complete resume. The thing I don't like about the net ratings is it benefits teams that play a little bit of a lesser schedule early on and blow teams out early on. Look at the Big 12. We saw Clemson's coach last week. He was complaining about how the Big 12 has, you know, eight teams in the top 56 net rating. And he's saying that the reason why is because the net rating values your wins and how big of a margin you win. So these teams are playing teams in the early part of the season, blowing them out of the water, it makes them look a lot better when they're all playing head-to-head. And I'm not saying that's the case for Arizona, but we know what Tennessee did in the out-of-conference schedule. Purdue, Kansas, North Carolina, Illinois, NC State. NC State might not be in the same category as those first four teams, but you're playing a very competitive schedule against really good teams and respectable teams in NC State. So I know Arizona had their fair share. Playing Purdue is great, but Tennessee did that too. FAU at the time looked like a better win than it does now. FAU is, I mean, on the verge of being in the bubble. So if that's one of your key marquee wins of the season, I don't know how much I'd value that, really. So I think when you look at Tennessee's wins compared to Arizona's wins, I think right now Tennessee's strength of record is better, and I think this is a number one seed. Argue with a wall if you don't agree with me. But I think you really have to give Tennessee the benefit of the doubt here, especially if they went out this week and we beat South Carolina and Kentucky.
Right.
There should not be a doubt.
Right.
Tennessee should jump ahead of Arizona, and Arizona doesn't have the opportunities remaining.
But that's what we said last week.
Yeah.
Is that if we went out, Tennessee should be a one seed.
Yeah.
That's what I think we all agreed upon.
Yeah. But even, you know, the Alabama game, that was a game that many people, including myself, did not know if that was a winnable game for Tennessee.
I did not personally think it was too great a scenario.
No.
Just because we've already beaten them once. We are going to their building. They're number one offense. People don't win in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Perfect storm.
Yeah.
And you know, we did a confidence level on Friday, me and Max did, right before we hopped off the air, we both gave it a 5 out of 10 confidence.
That's about where I was.
And it was very similar to the Kentucky game when you headed up there to Rupp. Tough environment, a lot on the line, and they were able to do it. I think that's very impressive. I think that speaks volumes to this team, where it's trending. I think this is a one seed. And if you don't agree, Andy Katz or whoever you may be out there.
Power rankings.
Yeah, argue with a wall. All right, let's take a look at Lenardi and his projections today. Tennessee is the 2 seed in the bracket with Houston. Houston, given a 1 seed, would match up with South Dakota State. The 8-9 game would be Northwestern and Colorado State. In Spokane, Auburn would have the 5th seed, playing McNeese State, a team we've talked about a couple times on here as a potential upset candidate. San Diego State, the 4 seed, taking on Charleston, the 13 seed. And then in Pittsburgh, you have the 6-11 game between Utah State and Indiana State. Two sneaky teams right there.
Yeah.
And then at the 3, you have Duke, a team we saw last year in the tournament, and Akron at the 14 seed. Now in Tennessee's quad in Charlotte, you have St. Mary's at the 7th seed, TCU at the 10, Tennessee at 2, and Quinnipiac at 15. St. Mary's, I think, would be an interesting matchup. They had a struggle this weekend at home against Gonzaga, but Aiden Mahaney is one of the best guards in the country, and the Gales are a good basketball team. This is hypothetical, not a hypothetical guy, but we'll do it here. What stands out about Tennessee's possible path?
When I first saw this, when Lenardi released it this morning, the alarm bells were going off seeing St. Mary's down there in our quad. I do not want to see them that early. We've talked about how sneaky good they are, how good they are defensively especially, and how slow they like to play basketball.
Sure.
If you get into a game where you're playing full 30-second possessions, it's not an easy team to beat at all. For any team in the country, they provide a matchup nightmare for just about everyone. I know they do fall to Gonzaga, but they still present you, a team like Tennessee that's, you know, 0 to 10 seconds, they present you a serious nightmare scenario where you're having to take 25 seconds of possession. I don't know if that's a winnable scenario for Tennessee. So that, to me, alarm bells. We're ringing at that one. I do not want to see them that early. That was one of the few teams I think I don't really want to see at all in the tournament, just because of the threat they present to basically anyone in the country. Beyond that, not much else has really changed for me. I don't like seeing Houston as the 1 seed still, because of the defensive effort that they can put out on a nightly basis, and especially, you know, where you'd see them. You'd have to go through St. Mary's to get to them. You'd have to go through Indiana State, Utah State to get to them. I don't like where that game falls, and I'd much rather have an Arizona, I think, in your region that you'd play in that game instead. It's not as bad as the one last week, though, me and Jace looked at. The one that me and Jace looked at was rough last week. So it's better, at least. And again, a lot still to change over the next couple weeks. Yeah. But I do not like the second round game. I don't like the Elite Eight game. Other than that, not too bad.
Yeah, I'm really not a fan of that round of 32 game, not only because of St. Mary's, but TCU's been a little streaky this year, too. And they've been known to win some weird games like that. So that's one I really don't want to run into. And, you know, Duke at the 3 seed's not a great pull either, because, I mean, that team's always going to come out and play. They've been better on defense this year than I think they were last year. So that could also present a nightmare matchup. You know, Utah State's always going to be pesky. Indiana State's got what their coach called Larry Nerd or something like that, one of their boys.
I saw that guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's been putting on a show for Indiana State this year, but I'm glad that Houston and Auburn are on the other side of the bracket, to where you don't have to see them till the Elite Eight, because Auburn's going to be feisty. I really don't want to see them at all again, because, I mean, they very well could have won here in Knoxville, but thanks to Dalton Connect, things turn the page. But I also don't like the Houston poll whenever Arizona could be there. Like you said, Houston's just a nightmare matchup for anybody in this bracket right here, so avoiding them for as long as you can is probably the best thing you want to do, but lining them up at the Elite Eight's not something I want to see either.
Yeah, so you mentioned Indiana State's Robbie Avila.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they've called him Larry Nerd and Kareem.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Yeah.
He's a funny player. He's got some interesting tattoos on there on him that makes him even
look. And he wears the goggles,
He honestly looks like y'all ever play 2K My Career and play for too long, and they have those AI-generated players come in. Looks like one of those guys.
Like ones that I would make.
Yeah.
It's the AI version of Nikola Jokic. I thought he played when I watched his highlights.
plays.
Yeah, recite Nikola Jokic from memory.
Yeah.
And yeah, get him.
Basically.
Did he wear goggles?
Yeah. Look, when I look at this projected region here, obviously Houston scares me. I think that's a matchup Tennessee does not want to have to face. And then looking to the teams you'd have to play a little bit earlier on, St. Mary's, I think, is a team that would be an interesting matchup for the Vols. They've got really good guard play. I think Tennessee would be able to win with Connect just being able to impose as well. And I think Tennessee's a little bit stronger in the post as well, something that the Gales struggled with this weekend against Grand Mike and Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. But a rematch with Duke, you know, it's tough to beat Duke in the tournament once, and it's hard to do it twice in consecutive years. So I think that'd be an interesting matchup if you were able to face them. I do think, though, the winner of Utah State, Indiana State, could very well beat the Dukies. And Utah State plays really, really good defense. This is a team coached by Danny Sprinkle that I think should be up for Coach of the Year, and he is. Utah State was supposed to finish ninth in the Mountain West, and they're number one.
Yeah.
They defend the perimeter better than anyone in the country at holding teams to 28%. So I think that'd be a tough matchup and would be a tough matchup for Connect. And then going up a little bit further, having to play Auburn or San Diego State, those are two really good defensive-minded teams as well. Bruce Pearl, having to face him again in the same season probably doesn't bode well for you. San Diego State was able to make it to the Final Four for a reason last year. Now, they are offensively limited, but we have seen Tennessee struggle against good defensive teams come tournament time, so that'd be a question as well. But overall, I think this is an okay path, not my favorite, not the worst that we've seen in this exercise over the last couple months. I think it's very important that Tennessee is able to get the one seed or the two seed in Arizona's bracket, because I think Arizona is the most favorable matchup for Tennessee out of the number one seeds currently listed. I think UConn would be a tough cover for anyone. Purdue, I'd like another shot at them. But you know how that game went the first time. If you're not able to stay out of foul trouble, it could get ugly there too. So I like the Arizona matchup. I'd like to get out of Houston's bracket as soon as possible. Their defense is really good. I think that could be the rubber match for Tennessee. Always March Madness provides so many interesting matchups and interesting outcomes from these games. So you never know if you'd actually get to play Houston, but with the way Houston's been playing, it'd be a good bet, one of our best bets for them to advance in this tournament, in this hypothetical tournament. But let's move to just the Vols' past in the tournament. The Vols have been notorious for letting down in the tournament. What makes this team different?
Well, I mean, the first thing is two words. Dalton Connect makes this team different. It's not a player we've had, I said, at least since Chris Lofton, in terms of just being a dynamic scorer that can score from everywhere, that can take over a game. The Vols do not get these kinds of players on campus very often. He can change your game, and he's the type of player that can carry you through a tournament. There's been others. The one I wrote down was Kemba Walker. For UConn. There's been plenty of others. That's just the first one that popped in my mind. But he's that kind of player. He's going to get the ball in the big spot. He's going to get the ball when you need a bucket. So that is one reason why this team is different, because they have a player like him. He's a very rare type of basketball player. This team has an offense. The Tennessee teams under Barnes have not been notoriously known for their offensive firepower. This team's got it. They've shown they can have 5, 6, 7 guys in double figures a night if that's what they need to do. They don't have to play, lockdown defense, hold the games in the 50s anymore like we talked about for the past couple years. Now we can play games in the 80s. We can play games in the 90s if we really have to. You can push those games to that, which you have to do in college basketball now with the offense, with the points continuing to go up every year. It feels like we're averaging more points per game. Yeah. You need to have an offense that can match that. I think we finally do. It's just all the pieces are working together so far this year. The last one for me is big wins on the road and growth as a team. It feels like this team is fixing things, whereas last year's teams before that kind of had problems that we just always saw.
Yeah.
I'll use the scoring droughts as an example. Like last year, it was very, very apparent early in the year that the team just – there was times that they'd go 6 minutes without a bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that never changed. It happened in the FAU game. It's why you lost the FAU game. You couldn't score in the second half. You went on, a 6 or 7 minute scoring drought. Game got out of hand. It was over. You couldn't do anything. Whereas this year's team – Like they fix stuff. You know, stuff goes wrong, they'll come out and fix it.
Yeah.
You know, they have a bad effort against South Carolina, they come out and fix it, have a great couple weeks. Like, they're able to just fix stuff, and now they're able to get big wins on the road, which is another thing that we talked about that they struggled with under Rick Barnes, that they're able to do now. They're able to win those big games on the road, and it gives you a lot of hope going to the tournament.
Yeah, you've got a bucket getter in Dalton Knecht, like you said, Dawson, something that this program hasn't seen in quite some time. I've heard maybe as far back as Allen Houston as just a pure score type guy that can pull you out of just any situation. I think that's one thing that he brings to this team that hasn't been here with Rick Barnes. I think another thing is just you're consistently getting role players to step up when you need them to. Like William said, there's games like where Jemai Mayshak will pop off, where Jordan Ganey will have a big game. And even when Vescovy's, like, he'll throw in 12 points randomly throughout the year and you end up winning those games because of that. I think the consistency on that end, when somebody's lagging behind, you get somebody to step up, that's something that's separating this team from years past, just because, like you said, those scoring droughts have haunted this team for what feels like forever, at least since being up here as students. Game in and game out, I feel like we would see it. But with this team, it's a little bit different. We haven't really seen that much, if at all, this year. And this team is also very mature. They even when you get down late, you aren't really panicking. Now,
right.
Now in a tournament setting, you are going to have to, you know, tighten up a little bit just
right.
because it's win or go home. But being able to withstand adversity, take your game to the next level whenever it gets to nut-cutting time, that's really when, you know, This team has grown overall, like you said.
Yeah, 865-546-8200. Head to the phones in just a second. Want to give my piece real quick. It really, what it is, what I talked about earlier, it's pace, having a closer in Connect and your supporting cast. I think this is what makes this team different and makes this team built for a run in March. And Dalton, you mentioned Dalton Knecht. Dawson, you mentioned, you know, last year we kind of knew what the problem was throughout the year. It was lingering that this team, if they got in a rut offensively, those notorious scoring droughts, they were unable to have a response after. This season, you've seen a couple of times where they fall on the road, a fall at home. They always have a response or a way to figure it out the next game to where they're so that they're better prepared. I think this team is totally different, and that's what I continue to try and tell people. Pace, a closer in Connect, supporting cast, and they've learned from their mistakes. Now let's head to the phones real quick. 865-546-8200. We've got Philly on the line.
We got Bruce first.
Oh, Bruce first. What's up, Bruce?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, I just mentioned a couple of things. I really want to praise Rick Barnes for the last two games and how difficult the two teams that we just played and how he put together a great coaching job. I don't think he gets, as much credit verbally as he should. But anyway, so I thought I'd just do a shout-out to him. Also, and I was just trying to get y'all's opinion, but so for the first time in a long time, maybe a couple of seasons, I mean, I actually just have learned to love this basketball team. And, I mean, I know the players now. I get excited about either A, going to the game, or B, turning the TV on and watching the whole game. Do y'all kind of feel the same passion as I do? I mean, that's just a little question there.
Yeah, I think the passion for this year's team is equally shared by those that are students, those that are fans. I think this is a fun product to put out. And what makes this team fun is that you have an offense now that each night you're tuning in gives you a little bit something every night. Last year, it kind of felt like you were tuning into a paint-drying contest between two defenses. And defense is very important, and I'm not saying that having good defense is bad, but for a tuning in aspect, you know, it's a lot more fun to see a team that has an offense that can be electric and also get it done on the defensive end. I thought Saturday's game against Alabama was one of the most fun watches of the season. And then Auburn was too. I mean, if you were in the stands for the Auburn game, many people said that's one of the best games they've been to in TBA FCC for a while now. And it was fun. And when people are engaged and enjoying the product of their team, I think naturally you get more and more of a fandom that continues to grow throughout the season, and you can probably thank Dalton Connect being as polarizing as he is for that. So I think this team is fun, and I think a lot of people would agree with that.
So here's my question for the night. I'm going to hang up and listen. But I'll stay on the same theme. You guys have been talking about being a number one seed. Yeah, obviously, if Tennessee wins out, wins the next two games, goes through the tournament, wins the tournament, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed not to give Tennessee a number one. However, if they stumble just one game, whatever it would be, I guess the rival for the number one seed is Tennessee versus Arizona.
Correct.
So
yeah.
The question is, does the TV regional have an impact, or how does it have an impact? And then with the fact that Arizona is on the West Coast, more in the Las Vegas time zone and that type of thing, does that have a greater impact where that might create some difficulty for Tennessee being a number one seed? So I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Bruce. It's actually a conversation I had earlier today with some of my roommates that were wondering how the region works, because some people thought that when you hear West Region, they're going to be playing in Los Angeles or something like that. So
it's
here,
not the case.
Yeah, here are actually the cities that the first and second rounds will be taking place in. So you have Charlotte, Omaha, Pittsburgh, Salt Lake City, Brooklyn, Indianapolis, Memphis, and Spokane. So what they're trying to do with these regions, they'll take the top four teams and try to place them in a situation where, you know, if you're from, let's say UConn, they'll most likely be the winner of the top seed in the East region. Mm-hmm. They'll try and put them as close to where their demographic of fans will be. Now, it's not always the case, because some years you have a lot of good teams in one side of the country and you just can't do anything about it.
Right.
But with Tennessee, you know, I think they're going to try and get the Vols in either Charlotte or Memphis. Now, Charlotte and Memphis also, they have a couple of different locations. In this bracket that we proposed today, the South region, is this the West? I think it might be the West.
It could be the West.
Yeah, the West region where they have Houston. Memphis is the host site for the number one seed in the West region. Charlotte is the host site for the two seed. So it's all about the quads, because you'll get some instances where you have two different brackets or two different regions playing in the same location. So, for instance, the winner of the South will also be in Charlotte, but it'll also have the West 2 seed in Tennessee,
yep.
The 7 and 10 and 15, they'll all be playing those quads as well. So they try to get them to where they can play close enough to where the fans can get a good look. They're trying to sell the product of these games,
right?
Yeah,
it doesn't make
money,
yeah, it doesn't make any sense to put Tennessee and Salt Lake City. I'm not traveling to Utah, but that's the main goal of the regions. But just because it says West doesn't mean all the locations are in the western portion. Thank you for your call, Bruce. We appreciate it. Let's now head to the phones again, and we got Philly on the line. What's up, Philly?
What's going on, guys?
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
I was wondering what happened to – I heard Jordan Moore on the View today. What's going on?
Yeah, Jordan Moore is one of our correspondents, but also calls in and joins other places as well. He has some time constraints during this time from 6 to 8, so for the spring, he's not able to join us right now, but he will be back and when he's done with those previously scheduled time constraints. But good to still hear him on our airwaves, though.
Yeah, he's a knowledgeable guy about basketball, that's for sure.
He is. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
And y'all talking about the Tennessee team this year. Well, one factor is Connect. No doubt he's the X factor, but having a healthy Ziegler in the tournament this year is huge.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, I think the biggest difference between the Vols at the beginning of the season and in conference play has been Ziegler. Because at the beginning of the year, I think Ziegler was still coming off that injury, coming back, and wasn't 100%. But since the new calendar year, Ziegler has been the consistent second-best player on this team defensively, getting it done by playmaking, And also, he's hit some really big shots as of late, too. Oh, a couple of those ones at Alabama were big shots down the stretch. Ziegler is a quintessential, just cornerstone point guard in college basketball. And every team that has had success in the tournament has to have one. The Vols got one in Ziegler.
Yeah, not only that, you're getting 10 or 12 points out of a do every night.
Yeah.
And that's something we didn't have last year.
Yeah. And Adu is a guy that, you know, was kind of in the shadows of Juroš Plašević and even John Wilkerson in the beginning of the year. In the beginning of, I guess, what was his freshman year? Adu would come in every now and then.
Yes.
But Adu now, this is, I mean, he's the focal point of the front or on the block. So he's got a lot of opportunities now, and he's made the best of it. He's a really good finesse player on the glass, really good touch. He's shown a lot of examples this year of being a really good pick and roller offensively as well. In his defense, he's a good shot blocker and can get some rebounds against lesser inferior opponents. Now we've seen a little bit of a struggle against the Edies and Hunter Dickinsons of the world, but Adu I think is a really good, a really big piece of this offense as well and defense.
What do y'all think tomorrow night? Your gut feeling? Think Tennessee will win?
Yeah, you know, I think this is an interesting one. I think South Carolina is a little bit hard to read at times. You know, they were down by double digits to Florida late in the second half on Saturday. They were able to come back and benefit off of a bunch of turnovers from the Gators. But, you know, South Carolina came into here and beat up on us. But keep in mind, we shot the worst we've shot all season. Are you banking on Tennessee shooting like that again? But there is something to note. We have not played the best on the road in SEC play as a whole. Now, I know we got a big win against Alabama on Saturday, but Tennessee usually has given up about a 10-point differential between three-point defense and the Vols' three-point shooting, something to watch on tomorrow night.
We will win as long as we're not looking ahead to Saturday against Kentucky.
I agree with that as well.
That's the problem I've been thinking about all week leading up to this game.
Well, you wrap the title up and you win tomorrow.
Yeah,
yes. You do.
You do.
Yeah.
I know one of you guys is from Memphis. I was watching the state tournament on TV this Saturday and watched Memphis Briarcrest beat Brentwood Academy. And this Fred Smith, 8'6", 8", power forward, he reminds me of Ron Slay. How highly recruited is he? Do y'all know anything about him?
Is it Cooper Haynes you're talking about? There,
no, I'm talking about the kid from Briarcrest. He's 6'8", he's a sophomore.
Oh, 6'8".
He's the best player on the team for Briarcrest.
Yeah, well, I know, so Cooper Haynes is a senior for that team. He's about 6'.
Yeah, he's a good player, too, but he don't have the ability this guy's got.
Yeah, I don't know the guy you're talking about. Haynes is the only guy I know because he was there when
Freddie
I was still. Freddie Smith, number what number is he?
I don't know what his number is, but he can play.
Interesting. I'll have to look it up, and if you call back in a couple days, I'll give you a better read on him. But I don't know much about him. I still keep up with high school basketball in Memphis. I went to MUS, so we played against Briarcrest a fair amount, but I do not know about Freddie Smith.
Well, I saw Ron Slay in high school, and he's a carbon copy of Ron Slay.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm looking at him, write up on him real quick, but apparently he's had a really good year all season long. Freddie Smith Jr.
They got a freshman point guard. He looks like he's going to be he'll be a D1 player eventually.
Yeah, look, Briarcrest has done a really good job in my, I guess 5-6 years being in Memphis, and really they continue it. Kennedy Chandler came from Briarcrest, ended up playing here for the Vols. Jade Nash was a point guard for them for a while. He's now at McEachern in Georgia playing with Ace Bailey, who's the number one player in the class, or I guess number two player. But Briarcrest has a really good knack for finding some players and finding some talent, and they usually hang around until they go to a big name or prep school.
Is it because the private schools have better coaching than the public schools in Memphis?
I'd say yes. Briarcrest's facilities are very, very nice. They can also Coach Herring, I can't remember, I think it's Tyler Herring is their coach. He's been there for a while, and he's got a knack for just finding guys. And Briarcrest facilities are very, very nice. It's easy to kind of recruit those guys and come in. Do you remember Austin Nichols? Do you remember him? He played at Memphis and went to Virginia.
Yeah, Nichols
was a guy that played for Briarcrest as well.
Yeah.
And he was a big, but they've always done really, really well at recruiting good basketball players.
Well, I've been down there at Memphis Bartlett. That thing's a basketball factory down there. Isn't it?
Yes,
I mean, good Lord.
It is. I actually know a guy that transferred there this year. He went to MUS and played at a prep school last year, now transferred to Bartlett. They've got a brand new stadium over there. It's very nice. They've put in a lot of effort into that facility, too.
Yeah. Well, at MUS, they played Catholic a tough game up here a few years ago, and I saw that game.
They did. MUS had a couple of guys, and one of them now plays at Bartlett, but another guy, Curtis Givens, he's going to LSU next year. They had both of them for 2 years, but they ended up going to bigger and better places. It's just kind of hard to keep those guys at MUS.
Yeah, if IMG or, you know, Mount Verde or
all
those type of schools call, you go. That's just the way it is now.
Exactly.
All right, guys. See you.
Philly, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. Let's hit a quick break real quick. When we come back, we'll talk about the Diamond Vols and take your calls right here on Overtime.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com. Identity theft protection starts here.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
I might be too strung out on compliments. Overdose on compliments.
Back here on Overtime. Thank you so much for your calls, calling in. Good conversations in the first segment. We'll continue them on in the next segment. And, let's talk about the Vols carrying on a 10-game win streak into the midweek matchups. The current score against Kansas State, Vols are knotted up at 2 apiece. And we'll dive into that game here in a second. But just giving you a little bit of an update on the Vols. After another weekend series sweep, Tennessee is slated to play five more home games this week, starting with a pair of midweek contests, Kansas State today and Southern Indiana. The Vols carry a 10-game win streak into Tuesday's contest against the Wildcats after posting a 4-0 record last week. Tennessee continued its early season success with another undefeated showing, going to a four-game run with, going 4-0 to run its win streak to 10 games, marking the program's sixth win streak of 10 or more games since 2019. Over its current streak, the Vols have outscored their opponents 117-30 and have boasted five run rule victories, including three straight in last weekend's series sweep of Bowling Green. UT is averaging 11.7 runs per game during the streak as well. Guys, we were talking about at the break, you guys had a couple updates about the game. Provide them real quick to the listeners.
Well, it's 2-2 right now, bottom of the second. Kansas State got two early ones on a single, one earned, one not for the starter tonight, Aaron Combs, which I thought was a really odd decision after no Snead all weekend. Still 2-2 in the bottom of the second. Looks like Christian Moore just hit a single in the bottom of the second with two outs. So
I've got an update from that. So,
okay, well, there you go. Mine's behind.
Burke hit an RBI double right after that, and Moore got thrown out at home trying to score from first on that double. So it's 3-2 Tennessee heading into the third. And on my little stat broadcast up here, it's saying that Nate Snead's going to be taking the mound here in the third inning.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, good deal. We're going to see him anyway.
That was one of the questions we had, and even yesterday. Okay, no Nate Snead this weekend. Do we see him come out and start today? Doesn't get the ball, but now comes in the third. A perfect timing to talk about Blake Burke. After hitting three homers in last weekend's series sweep of Bowling Green, junior slugger Blake Burke is just six home runs away from tying the program record held by his predecessor at first base, Luke Lupus, who hit 40 during his UT career, 218 games played. Burke's 34 career long balls have come in just 122 games played. So almost half of the games.
Yeah.
And Burke has been firing away. How important is that Burke continues to get his bat rolling even after a slow start to begin the
year?
Well,
I mean, it's crucial. He's another one of the anchor guys in the offense along with Tears and Amick and Peebles in the middle of that lineup. He's one of the guys that you expect to come out and put up big numbers, the guy you expect to get a big hit. I mean, he's that kind of guy. He's been around for a while now here in Knoxville, so you expect him to be able to produce. A slow start's not what I expected. It's not what a lot of people expected, so to be able to get him back is going to be massive. Just like Billy Amick is kind of taking pressure off of him, he's also taking pressure off of those guys. Those guys aren't as much under pressure to get up there and perform, get up and get a big hit. He can do that too. He can shoulder some of that weight and bear some of that load. So that's going to be huge going forward too, because if all these guys are rolling, Amick, Tears, Peebles, and Burke, who do you pitch to? I heard somebody talking about that the other day when I was at the game. You can't pitch around this team, one of the first five hitters the way they are. So if you get him back especially, that's going to present some problems for opponents going forward. And he's kind of like Jordan Ganey in basketball, where he's a spark plug because of the home runs that he hits. They're such majestic, big-time home runs that he hits when all of a sudden everybody's juiced. You know, the adrenaline's going. He's the kind of guy that can get you into a game. Now he hits an RBI double tonight. You take the lead on that play, so already making his presence felt in that regard tonight as well. But he's that kind of guy that can change a game, flip the momentum, and really flip the script in a ball game.
Yeah, it's going to be big, especially later on this year. It's not too much of a concern right now because, you know, we're so used to seeing him, like you said, having these humongous, towering shots all the time. That hasn't been at the forefront this year. Now, granted, he's coming off of a three home run weekend where he did just that, but so far this year, he's been doing it more, you know, doubles, off the wall stuff like that, putting together good at bats, putting balls in play, and working with more of like a small ball-ish type of hitting, I guess, prowess up at the plate. So seeing him be able to have some sort of versatility up there, not just be a one-trick pony, is pretty big for this offense as well. Whenever you're surrounded by guys that can get on base as well, those runs are going to start tallying up, and you don't have to rely on the big fly. You can put together a two-run double here and there, and games can be blown wide open and keep the rally running. So seeing that from him early is a good sign. It's still not too much of a concern for me just because we haven't gotten into the meat of what this upcoming SEC slate is going to be. But seeing it rolling this early, really good sign for the Vols.
Yeah, I think it is a very good sign. A guy that has, you know, been around here for a while, a very important piece of this offense. And, you know, there's been a lot of guys that have come out of the gates really hot. Burke is now starting to kind of find his momentum, find his stride as of late after a tough start. And one of those guys he's contending with, as you mentioned, Dawson, is Billy Amick. Junior third baseman has been red hot at the plate this season, leading the team and ranking among the SEC leaders in numerous offensive categories, including hits with 17, home runs with 7, RBIs with 18, total bases with 42, and slugging percentage with .933. Amick was named the SEC Player of the Week on Monday after blasting 4 homers and leading the league with 8 runs scored last week. How big of a difference is Billy Amick making on this team?
It's massive. Offensively provides you, you know, the anchor for the offense, at least so far to this point. I mean, he has been the guy, the focal point to this point in the year. As these other guys try to find their way a little bit. Burke tries to get his bat back. Tears finds, you know, his stride in hitting in that 4 spot. Peebles tries to find his stride at the SEC level. Amick, there was no finding his stride. I mean, he came on campus and immediately was an impact, and he can be that kind of anchor. He provides you a veteran presence. I mean, he's a junior. He's played plenty of college baseball at this point. Played in some big games. Heck, played in a super regional against Tennessee last year, so he's seen all these guys before, but provides you the opportunity to take the pressure off Christian Moore and Blake Burke, you know, whereas maybe last year the pressure was on them a little bit to perform, this year not as much. You know where you have Amick come in and he'd say, you know, I can shoulder some of this too and let you guys kind of, you know, help me bear this weight rather than have to do it yourselves. And then defensively, shores up a gap that we did not expect to have. I think we all figured that Zane Denton would be back this year. Yeah. When he says he's not, you kind of wonder, okay, well, you know, what's the defensive hit going to be at third base with how good Denton's glove was over there, how good his arm was over there. And Amick has stepped right in and been just as good, in my opinion. Defensively, has already contributed well on the infield and shores up, you know, one of the question marks that we had coming into the year.
Yeah, absolutely, just knocks up that that hot corner for us, and it feels like he's continue, and it is continuing the trend of just high tier, high caliber guys at the third base position. Because you remember that 2020 and 2021 team with Jake Rucker out there, his backup Trey Lipscomb puts together a historic season over there with like 22 home runs or something like that. Absolutely crazy production and really good on the defensive side of the ball. I think he's kind of already proven that he's going to be more of an anchor on that offense than Zane Denton did last year. Much more consistent at the plate, not sort of just hitting 260 and waiting for a big one to turn your life around. He's going to put together at bats and he's going to put together hits. I mean, he hit .413 last year, and that's no slouch at any level. So him being able to roll that over from such a great year last year at Clemson, and fitting and slotting right into that role of being the guy for this offense, it's huge for this offense of Tennessee.
Yeah, I think the big question coming in for him was, okay, is he able to relate to SEC play? And I know we're not in SEC play yet, but so far you've seen that he, it looks like he will be an impact in SEC play. As the Vols take a 4-2 lead, Kavaris Tears with a home run.
It was an Amick home run.
Oh, Amick. Okay. Okay. Well, look at that. Right on cue. I'm sorry.
Good. It's a little confusing. Yeah.
Well, right on cue, Billy Amick hits a home run as I'm talking about how big of an impact he's had. Going back to it, I think he's been an instant impact for this team coming in from Clemson. You didn't know if it'd relate to Tennessee, and it has. And he's been really big, and I think his impact will continue to grow as we get into bigger games like a Kansas State today, like Illinois this weekend, and getting closer into SEC play. And speaking of Illinois and getting closer to SEC play, the Vols host Big Ten foe Illinois in their final home weekend series of the non-conference slate this weekend at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. First pitch for Friday's season opener, or series opener, excuse me, is at 6 p.m. What do the Vols need to carry momentum from these first two games against Southern Indiana and Kansas State into a big out-of-conference series?
Well, take care of your business is the first thing I wrote down. We talk about this in basketball with the midweeks all the time. You know, take care of your business. Kansas State's a good team, a very talented team. So, you know, it's not like the team we're playing tomorrow. Southern Indiana is a little bit different story. You're still playing a great team tonight, but take care of your business. It's not a ranked team. you know, take care of your business and win the ball game, which they're doing right now, and just keep that rolling. Go 2-0 on the week going into the weekend so that you're not having to bounce back at all. Just take care of your midweeks. Don't use too many arms. Just, you know, now that we're getting into these series where, you know, it's not conference play yet, but it's a big series this weekend. It's one of our first big weekend series. But especially as you get into conference play, you don't want to be wasting a ton of arms in the midweek games where you might need those guys come Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You want to not make yourself shorthanded. Give guys experience. Don't get me wrong. Get those guys out there and get them some run. But save your better arms for the weekend so you're not having to worry about a shortage of arms. I don't think that'll be a problem for this team going forward. And then the last one is keep the offense rolling. Do what you've been doing. We talked about it yesterday. Keep scoring runs. This team knows how to do that in a big way. Do it again tonight. Do it tomorrow. And carry that into the weekend against Illinois.
Really, my only thing for this one is be dominant on the mound. I mean, like you said, keeping the arms, you know, at a minimum, not using too many and using the ones that you have. As long as you can stretch them, I think that's going to be good, especially when it comes to conditioning, rolling into these later season games where, you know, guys aren't used to just going out there for one inning. They've been out there for three or four at a time and can give you good stretches like that. I think that's pretty big. And beyond that, you really don't want days like this past Sunday where you're throwing eight guys out there and some of them are struggling. You want to get those guys in the midweek so they can, you know, face maybe lesser competition and grow a little bit before you throw into the wolves. But just keeping your arms fresh and be dominant on the mound, I think that's what's going to keep this team rolling throughout the season.
All right, we're gonna take a quick timeout here. We'll see you on the other side with our best bets of the night. Stay right here on Overtime.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
White Claw is taking hard seltzer to new heights with White Claw Surge. At 8% alcohol, White Claw Surge is a stronger wave of refreshment that doesn't compromise on taste. Available in four bold waves of flavor like ripe blackberry, citrusy blood orange, zesty natural lime, and tart cranberry. Check out your favorite retailer in-store and online for the White Claw Surge Variety 12-pack and 16-ounce single-serve cans. White Claw Surge. Please drink responsibly.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party? You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Pull up. Frank. Headshot. Frank. Sit down. Frank. Stand up. Frank. Pass out. Frank. Wake up. Frank. Fade it. Frank. Fade it. Frank.
Back here on Overtime, we will not be fading these. These are our best bets of the night, our favorite segment of the hour. I'll begin with Kansas minus 11.5, taking on the Wildcats. The Jayhawks are in desperate need of a bounce-back win. They rarely lose in Lawrence, And Kansas State has looked good in home matchups, but has looked poor against really good teams on the road. I like the 11.5 tonight for Kansas.
All right, I'm going to the Big Ten game tonight. I'm going to take Purdue plus 2.5 on the road at Illinois. This is a Purdue team that, again, I don't really know why they're not favored. Favored to be the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament right now. A gutsy win against Michigan State, who gave them a scare. And an Illinois team that is good. Don't get me wrong. Terrence Shannon was very good. Domask had his best game of the year last time out, but I think they're still a tier below Purdue, and I just don't think they can hold up, especially 2.5 points. You're fading them 2.5 points on the road. I don't like that. Give me Purdue plus 2.5.
I've got Florida minus 1.5 at home against Alabama. It's two big offenses that went toe-to-toe last time in Tuscaloosa, but Alabama pulled it out late. I think the Gators want some revenge here. Bama's going to look for a bounce back after losing to Tennessee, of course, but I don't think the Gators are going to let it go. Clayton had 27 last time against Alabama. I think he's going to show up once again tonight. Florida minus 1.5.
Also taking Florida. I'm taking Florida money line, however. The Gators rank 15th in adjusted efficiency and 88th in defensive efficiency. The Gators very well should have won that game in T-Town just about a week ago or two weeks ago, whatever it was. And I expect them to cruise at home tonight, where their defense has been much improved over the last couple of games. It plays well at home as well. Alabama, a lot of concerns about them. Yes. Their defense is a huge question mark, yeah, and it hasn't traveled on the road this year. Give me Florida money line.
USF tonight minus 7.5 at home against Tulane. This is a very surprising USF team. I don't think anybody expected them, yes, to win the AAC, let alone, yeah, only have 4 losses in conference play. They have not lost a basketball game, period, since January the 7th. So about a 2-month win streak on the line tonight against a Tulane team under 500 that is not playing very well. They've lost their last 6 in conference. So not a great look for them tonight going on the road to a USF team that jumped in the rankings, mm-hmm, for the first time last week and is trending well towards the NCAA tournament. They continue to roll. Give me them minus 7.5 tonight.
This one I was tossing and turning over, but I'm going to trust my gut here. Celtics minus 8 on the road at Cleveland. They haven't lost since February 1st to the Lakers. That's 11 straight wins for the Celtics. The last six of those being by double digits. I think they can take care of business on the road here. I mean, they're up like 8.5 in the East right now, and they're rolling on all cylinders, to say the least. So I think they're going to keep it rolling. Celtics minus 8 on the road.
Like that USF pick. I talked about him last week on my podcast. Abdul Rahim has done a really good job, yep, there. Was the mid-major coach of the year last year at Kennesaw State. Comes over to USF. That team, I think, deserves to be a tournament team. Chris Youngblood, who was their point guard last year at KSU, has come over to USF and has been one of their best players. Fun team to watch. I love that bet. Also, another note on the Cavs game tonight. It is Jason and Travis Kelce bobblehead night for the Cavs. Don't know how the Cavaliers relate to that.
From Cleveland?
I think, yeah, they're from Cleveland.
Are they from Cleveland?
I think
Cleveland?
So, yeah. Cleveland Heights, I think, is what they claim. I think that's why their thing is called New Heights, their podcast.
I think it's an odd combo.
It very much is. It very much
but
is. Yeah.
Just thought I'd add that in there. My final best bet is Illinois money line. Taking on Purdue. Look, Purdue is 1-4 in their last 5 against the spread.
Sure.
And also, I think Illinois, their bigs, especially Coleman Hawkins, if they're able to stay out of foul trouble against Edie, I like that matchup. And Terrence Shannon and Domask, their guards on the perimeter, I think is going to cause a lot of problems for Purdue. Illinois playing at home, give me the Fighting Illini money line.
All right, fair enough. Well, I'm going to go against Jace tonight. I'm going to go with the Cavs plus 8.5 tonight at home against the Boston Celtics. Again, a Celtics team that hasn't lost in over a month.
Yeah.
They are by far the best team in the East. But the Cavs, we talked about them last month, how they had slowly crept into this conversation for the East. They had a long way to kind of creep back into this. Not in the greatest form recently, but this line was too big for me to ignore.
Yeah.
8.5 on the road. It's going to be tough, especially with it being, what would you say, Jason and Travis Kelce bobblehead. Tonight, apparently. Yeah. So
emotions are high.
It'll be raucous at the Quicken Loans,
be
baby.
It's at the Quicken Loans arena. But regardless, plus 8.5. I like the Cavs tonight.
All right. Those are our best bets of the night. The clock is ticking. Buzzard's about to sound. Let's head to a quick break. We'll be right back in the next hour to talk college basketball and the NFL right here on Overtime.